ओम ज्ञानति निरंधस्य ज्ञानंजन शलाकाय चक्षुर्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः.
But the original meaning of Ishtagoshti is simply to discuss about Krishna. So let's do that for some minutes in the presence of All-Merciful Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, Radha Krishna, Nityananda, Prahlad Maharaj, Panchatattva, Acharyas, Sampradaya Acharyas, and pray for their blessings, that we may always be fixed in their service and never deviate from it even slightly. So there are some questions. Well, in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, yayata mang prapadante tangs tathaiva bhajami aham, that Krishna reciprocates according to how we approach him. So any start in devotional service, that is welcome. If even a complete drunkard somehow or other says Hare Krishna, that is to his eternal benefit. Krishna certainly notices that. You must have all read the story in Prabhupada Lilamrita, quite an amazing story. How Prabhupada was lecturing at that 26 Second Avenue temple, and a bum walked in off the street, drunk, as bums usually are, holding a roll of toilet paper in his hand, and talking some nonsense, as bums usually also do. So he waddled into the storefront, and, you know, everyone, they didn't know what, you know, people, they didn't know what to think, you know, what's this guy gonna do? So talking his nonsense, he put down the toilet paper and went out. So being completely drunk out of his mind, he didn't know what he was doing, but he had donated one roll of toilet paper. So Prabhupada said his devotional service has begun. Now that wasn't Shuddha Sattva Paramahamsa Uttam Seva. It wasn't even anything slightly resembling that. You know, the bum, he could have walked into any other building and done the same thing. So, but somehow or other he walked into the temple and he donated a roll of toilet paper. So Prabhupada accepted it. Now, that shows how merciful a pure devotee is. You can't offer a roll of toilet paper to Krishna. Now, there are many things you can offer to Krishna. You can offer bells and flowers and fruits and different paraphernalia. You know, when we're offering the aarti, we say, idam vyajanam, this is the fan, etani pushpani, these are the flowers. There's no mantra for offering toilet paper. Esha shochalamayasya patravishesham, there's no such mantra. You see, even in Sanskrit, if you say something completely vulgar, it sounds very nice. In some languages, even if you say something nice, it sounds vulgar. So anyway, there's no scope to offer toilet paper to Krishna. There are many temples in India. Generally, people come, they give something to the pujari offers it. Some camphor, coconut, garlands, things like this. If you go up to the pujari and give him some toilet paper, I don't know what they'd do, actually. It's difficult to imagine. It's just not done. No one even thinks about it. I mean, Prabhupada, he also doesn't use toilet paper. That's one of the first things that Prabhupada, when he wrote a letter to some people in India, it's one of the first things he noticed. He wrote, the people here are not very cultured. After passing stool, they wipe their backsides with toilet paper. Or they smear the stool around on their backsides. So Prabhupada, he didn't use toilet paper. I mean, I'm sure he found some use for it. He probably found some use for it. You could probably use it for wiping the sink or something like that. The sink where you, with the water. But the point was, the Prabhupada saw that here is someone who's absolutely in the mode of ignorance. Now, after going through 8,400,000 species of life, suddenly he got in the human form of life. He's not really human. Circumstantially, he happens to have two hands and two legs. But he's not really a human being. By his consciousness, it's just like, you know, just like a mistake. He came up from the animal species, but he's going down pretty quick. Now, we get the human form of life after many, many millions of births. But even then, even in the human form of life, it's very rare to come in contact with a pure devotee of Krishna. And even out of those who come in contact with a pure devotee of Krishna, it's very rare that someone wants to do some service. So this bum's offering was absolutely covered by the mode of ignorance. He probably had no idea that he was doing some, you know, whether he was offering something or what he was doing. He's just insane. Prabhupada thought this is the chance, this is the only chance. Otherwise, he's already in hell by his consciousness. Prabhupada accepted it. And that was his first great step on the path back to Godhead. So, even if Krishna doesn't accept something, I mean, we can't offer anything and everything to Krishna. Even in our deity worship, you see, in deity worship, first of all, you have to do Guru Puja before you do the archana, because actually we're not qualified to worship Krishna. So we have to go through the pure devotees of Krishna, who, if they accept our service, they can offer it to their guru, and he will offer it to his guru, and in this way it goes up to Krishna. So the pujari is not thinking exactly that I am offering this to Krishna, but thinking that I am assisting my spiritual master in his service to Krishna. And the spiritual master is thinking, I am assisting my spiritual master in his service to Krishna. So it's a fact that we can only properly serve Krishna when we're fully situated in pure devotional service. But it's not so easy for the conditioned soul to come to that platform. Therefore, Krishna very mercifully sends his pure devotees, who are more merciful than him, to accept our mixed attempts at devotional service, to gradually guide us to become unalloyed devotees, and to offer what we offer to Krishna. If there is 1% of pure desire and 99% of impure desire, if there's something there, some sincere desire, the pure devotee will recognize that and gradually help us to come to the platform of 100% pure desire to serve Krishna. Any other question? So no one else. Okay. I didn't even translate that. Well, if we perceive a problem in our spiritual life, then we should work on improving that. What is the problem? Why am I behaving like this? And try to rectify. That means making some effort. Relationship is established by service. This is described in Rupa Goswami's Upadeshamrita. Six exchanges of love are shared between devotees. Tadati, Padigrahnati, to offer something to devotees, to accept what they offer in return. Guhyam Akyati Prichati, to discuss, reveal our minds to devotees, to inquire from them confidentially. Te Bhojayate Chaiva, to accept prasad offered by them and to offer prasad to them. So see if there's something you can do to serve devotees, give something to them. Try to serve devotees and offer prasad. Yeah, take up prasadam service. Try to serve them very nicely. That's a beginning. It's a suggestion. If you have a particular problem, you have to make an effort to try and overcome that. I personally, some years ago, I felt I was being too rough in my dealings with many devotees. And I saw that actually I was frying devotees out, to use ISKCON language. I saw that I was, in my dealings, I was sometimes frying devotees out, or quite often actually. So I deliberately observed the behavior of some devotees who I thought they dealt with other devotees better than I did. So I'm not saying I'm the greatest in dealing with interpersonal dealings, but I think by studying the behavior of others and trying to emulate that, I've made some improvement. So this is my suggestion. If you feel such a lacking in your personal life, one suggestion is to try to serve devotees and try to observe the behavior of other devotees who you think are better in that area than you are. Try to see what they're doing right, which you are not doing correctly. Try to see others who don't have that problem and see how they behave, and you try to behave like that. That's my suggestion. Hare Krishna. Have to see everything through our ears. Ears. You know what that means? Shrutekshana Pantha, this is described in Srimad Bhagavatam. The process of seeing through the ears. If you simply see the deities, you will think this is a dull. But when you hear from authorities, then you understand that Pratima Nahetumi Sakshat Vrajendra Nandan. You are not a statue. You are directly Vrajendra Nandan, Krishna, the darling child of Nanda Maharaj. So everything is understood by hearing. Just like if you see some scientific experiment is set up in the laboratory. You see some apparatus, some tubes, some different things. You don't know what's going on. But then someone will explain that this is to demonstrate how hydrogen and oxygen combine to make dihydrogen oxide, otherwise known as water. So just by seeing, you won't understand, but someone has to explain to you. Then you will understand.
That is the process.
That's why in English, sometimes we say, someone explains something, then we say, I see. That means, I understand. So understanding is by hearing. Therefore, hearing is stressed. Not simply seeing. Hearing is essential. Simply by seeing with the eyes, you cannot understand. Because Krishna is adhokshaja. He is not visible to the mundane eyes. Krishna is understood by those who develop their love for Him. Love develops first of all from understanding that He is the Supreme, I am His servant. This comes by hearing. So, see with your ears. Then you can see properly with your eyes. Jai Nithai Gaurachandra. No idea. I never saw anything in Shastra about that. There may be some benefit. Maybe some kind of indirect devotional service. At least by touching Tulsi, they get the benefit. But I can't say exactly. Can't say, well, you know, if you eat 50 bugs, then you get a human birth. If you eat 500 bugs, you get the chance to come to the temple. I can't say exactly, like 52, 53, 54, 55, 499. And someone shoots the bird dead, and doesn't he? Didn't make it up to 500. Often these things are very difficult to say exactly. Even there are many statements in the Nectar of Devotion that if you do this, you get such and such a result. If you wear tilak, are you wearing tilak? You are, okay. It's just difficult to see, that's all. Then the Yamadutas don't come to get you. If you dance in front of the deities, very pleasing to Krishna. And what is exactly is said in the Dwarka Mahatmya? It said, who's one who's dancing in front of the deities in Kartik month, he never has to take birth or something like that. So Rupa Goswami explains that these statements are given, it may not be in every case. Just like there's a story also of a rat who came to eat the gimmick. In the temples they generally keep a lamp burning. So one rat came to eat the cotton which was soaked in the oil. But in the process his whiskers caught on fire. So he was jumping up and down in pain with the whiskers burning. So he died like that. So he went to Vaikuntha. Because the last thing he did was offer arati, the lamp, the light to Krishna. So it's not that you should bring some rats before the deity and set them on fire. It's just one case. It may not be in every case. It's very difficult to say in every case what will be the result. Now, even by chanting Hare Krishna, you may not even get a human birth in the next life. And by being a rat who come to steal the giwik, which is, you're not supposed to do that, but he went back to Godhead. So you can't say exactly in every circumstance. Generally it's understood if you chant Hare Krishna you get a human birth, but it may not be in every case. Once Bhaktirao Thakur was touring holy places of Bengal, he came to one village in the evening and the village people gave him a deserted house to stay in. So he lay down and went to sleep. But there was so much noise and rumbling, and everything in the room was being thrown around. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur chanted Hare Krishna, and everything became peaceful. So in the morning, the villagers asked him, did you sleep peacefully? He said, yes. Well, how is that possible? But no one can sleep peacefully there, because there's a terrible Brahma Rakshasa. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, well, I chanted Hare Krishna, and he went away. He got liberated. We said, well, how is that possible? Because that was the pujari in his previous life. And he was always chanting Hare Krishna. Look what happened to him. By chanting Hare Krishna, he became a ghost. So how is it that by chanting Hare Krishna, you liberated him? Bhaktivinoda Thakur explained that, no, it wasn't by chanting Hare Krishna he became a ghost. By misrepresenting the holy names, he got such a position. Because he posed himself as a saintly person to cheat others, but was engaged in all kinds of illicit activities, he got such a punishment. But when the holy name is chanted purely, even such a sinful person can be delivered. So generally it's understood if you chant Hare Krishna, you get a human birth, at least. But if you pretentiously chant, that's actually very sinful, so then you may get a very degraded birth also. So it's very difficult to say exactly what will be the result. Anyway, if a bird happens to, at least by touching Tulsi, there's some benefit. Have you seen the birds coming to eat the bugs? Sampradaya vihinaya mantraste nishvalate mata. That's the verse Prabhupada used to quote from Padma Purana, which says that if the mantra is not received in the proper sampradaya, then there's no effect. Of course, the Hare Krishna mantra, it's not, it's a Vedic mantra, but at the same time it is the holy name of Krishna. So the name of Krishna, has its own special efficacy also. Generally, a mantra has to be received from a guru to have some effect. But the Hare Krishna mantra, even if you chant, even before initiation, the effect is tremendous effect is there. And even it's said that even without being initiated, one can become fully purified by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Dika puras charja. Dika puras charja vidhi upeka na kare. It said that even without taking initiation or without even following all the preliminary processes, then the Hare Krishna mantra has the effect. In the purport to that verse, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives many, many quotations from Shastra to show that actually it is required to take initiation. In other words, there may be some rare cases of people who, even without taking initiation, they chant the name purely. But generally, it is required that one take initiation and in this way become accepted into Krishna's family, the Vaishnava Sampradaya, and take all the blessings and guidance required to become fully purified in chanting. As far as standard Vedic mantras, if they're chanted without initiation, not only do they have no effect, but you become sinful by chanting without authorization. It's something like being a thief. You have to be given it, you can't just take it. But as far as the holy names of the Lord are concerned, that's also a Vedic mantra, but because it is the names of the Lord, everyone has the right to chant, just as everyone has the right to call out their father. And practically, we see that when people begin to chant, they start to become purified. But then there comes a stage where if they're going to progress further, they should take initiation. Isn't it? Don't we practically observe like this? What do you think? Have you observed like this? That people, when they begin to chant, even before they take initiation, then there's tremendous effect. But if they are going to go on seriously and make further and further advancement, then at some point they have to submit themselves for initiation. Crushed, so. They're all getting crushed, so it doesn't take up so much space. Thing is that Lord Chaitanya came and delivered them all. Another thing is that it's all relative also. Within one drop of water you can have billions of living beings in the form of germs. Better we empty out hell. Actually the whole material world is hell. So. Another thing is that they may go to the hellish planets. But the time scale is different in different planets. That even the modern scientists recognize that according to the movements of the planets in relation with the sun, the time is going more slowly or more quickly on different planets. This is Einstein's discovery. So there may be different explanations. I'm not an astronomer. Even Prabhupada, when he was asked some detailed questions, he said, Shukadeva Goswami wasn't an astronomer, nor am I. Shukadeva Goswami described the planetary systems in passing. Means that in the course of describing the Bhagavatam, more detailed information may be found in Vedic books of astronomy. If you like, you can study them. First you have to learn Sanskrit. There are many questions like this. Prabhupada wanted that our Bhaktivedanta Institute scientists study all these points so as to present the Bhagavatam, the Bhagavatam cosmology in a manner that can be understood and accepted by modern scientists. So Sadaputa Prabhu has made some endeavor in this regard, some progress in this regard. But it's a very big job. You can imagine that there are so many universities with so many scientists and so much money for funding them. And in all of ISKCON, studying this seriously, we only have Sadaputa Prabhu and some limited research funds. Of course, we have Krishna on our side, but to make the arrangements to deliver this knowledge requires a great endeavor. So exactly how all the details of the cosmos work out, I don't know. And even if Sadaputa Prabhu was here to explain it, we probably couldn't understand much of it anyway. Because it's complex technical information. Basically, you have to accept on faith that this is a God's eye view of the universe. That knowledge in Shastra is ultimately coming from Krishna. And Krishna should know because he created the universe. Everything is within the scope of his understanding. So our position is something like an ant. If an ant is in this room, he's so small, and his intelligence is so limited, and his sensory perception is so limited, that he can't understand how it's going on. Even the ant he can see also, he has eyes to see. But how an ant sees this room is according to his scope of understanding. Now, the ants among themselves, they have some means of communication. So they must communicate. That one ant will come back and say, hey, there's a piece of sugar over there. Let's go and get it. I found a piece of sugar. Isn't it that one ant, the ants are crawling around and one runs into a piece of sugar. Then you'll see he'll run back to the others and then they'll all come out and bring it back. So they have some geographical understanding which they can communicate to each other. But it's not the same as our understanding because we see it from a different perspective. So if it was to be explained from the ant's point of view, we would find it very limited. The ant can't understand to the extent that we understand. So similarly, we may see the universe and understand it in a certain way. So that may be correct according to our view of the universe. It may be. It may be also that these scientists have made many mistakes because they're always revising their theories. But when we read the descriptions in Bhagavatam, we can understand that these are descriptions of the universe from those who have a vision which we don't have. So they can see things that we can't see. Even if we tried to explain to the ant all the different features of this room, it wouldn't be possible for him to accommodate that within the scope of his tiny intelligence. So it's better not to reject the descriptions in Bhagavatam because we can't understand them, but rather understand that these are being described from a higher platform of sensory perception.